Are you a business owner or entrepreneur who's had great success in the business world, and now you want to launch a speaking career to share your message with the world? If that's you, then listen up. 25-year speaking industry veteran Brett Ridgway has released his latest special report, 3 Key Things Entrepreneurs Must Master to Build a Profitable Speaking Business. To pick up your copy, go to brettridgway.com/freebie. Welcome to the Spotlight on Speaking Show with Brett Ridgway, where you'll learn the keys to building a profitable speaking business from speaking industry pros. Each week, we interview a great guest who will share his or her speaking journey, identify what their keys to success have been, and highlight some critical mistakes they've made along the way that you'll want to avoid. Be sure to visit our website at spotlightonspeaking.com. And while you're there, subscribe to us via your favorite network. Now, sit back, tune in, and get ready to meet this week's guest.
Hello again, everyone. Welcome to another episode of the Spotlight on Speaking Show. I'm Brett Ridgway, your host, and I am excited to have as my guest today, Willard Barth. Willard's known around the world as a keynote speaker, a business consultant, a transformation expert, and a number one best-selling author. His success comes from applying a methodology that he created called the Anatomy of Transformation. His story not only inspires, it educates and empowers the audience to take immediate action. The system he will be sharing later on has been proven for over 30 years to get results as dramatic as a 93% growth in revenue in 12 months for one client, a 307% growth in revenues in 36 months for another, and helping a third client become one of the top 10 fastest growing companies in the USA. It didn't actually say in my intro here.
So it ended up being the top in New Jersey, and then the top 2,000 in the whole United States.
Is this the world? Is this the state? Is this the city? Whatever. So anyway, now we know New Jersey is it. So, all right. So I do want to dive into the transformation thing a little bit later, but first I'd like to talk about your speaking journey a little bit, Willard, because you've been involved in this game as long or longer than I have, which is, you know, we're dating ourselves here a little bit, but that's okay. Experience matters.
Yeah.
So I know when we talked a few days ago before the interview, you spent a long time in the Tony Robbins organization in various capacities, doing things for them. You've done your own speaking or whatever. So how far do we have to go back, Willard, to your very first time that you stepped on the stage and delivered a message of your own?
Well, that would have been an unpaid gig and several unpaid gigs about 34 years ago.
Yeah. Okay.
And then started doing it professionally 27 years ago.
All right. So what was the first topic? What did you speak about when you first got up in front of the room?
Really, it was about my own personal transformation. Just a quick little history on it. Lost my leg when I was 8 years old to bone cancer. Put me on two very diverse paths. One, I became this mega achiever. So I started making my living as a professional musician at 15. I was the first licensed amputee motorcyclist in Pennsylvania. I lettered in junior high school wrestling, senior high school football, and then had my first business by the time I was 19. The other side of that coin was I had an 8-year-old's perception of why I lost my leg. So I thought I was a bad person. You know, so I had a lot low self-worth, anger, all those things. So the same way that I excelled at the good things, I also excelled at the bad. With the anger, I started drinking and using drugs heavily at 13 years old. I didn't just start riding motorcycles. I ended up starting riding with a biker gang. 19 years old, I had my first business. And 19 years old, I also got my first drunk driving arrest. So, you know, it was this duality was going on. And 34 years ago, some of my first talks were around that part of going, what was my wake up moment and how did I begin to transform my life? And that was the beginning of the transformation. It was more about sharing the rough part of the journey at that point in my life.
So you said you went professional 27 years ago. Was that for yourself or for another organization? What's the story there?
So that's when I started working for Tony Robbins' organization. I had attended a 4-day event that his company was putting on. And while I was there, people were coming to me asking me questions to better understand what was being taught. And the staff recognized that I knew what I was talking about and I was giving good advice. So they offered me a job as a coach. And then because I had the background as an entertainer, they said, you know what, we're going to put you into corporate facilitation and training. So that's when I started doing the really what I considered the official speaking. And then when I left working for Tony, that speaking was how I generated my clients.
All right. So in my mind, there are three primary types of speakers, Willard. You have your keynote speaker that everybody's familiar with. You have what I call the platform seller. So they deliver their content, then offer some type of continuing education. And then you have people that just do it for business building purposes. Maybe they're a chiropractor or a lawyer or whatever. They speak to their local groups so that if people have a need for whatever their type of service is, they're who they'll think of if they need that thing. So which of those arenas have you played in and which do you prefer?
Well, actually, I would offer a fourth, and maybe this is included in your three, which is from a training aspect. You know, facilitating training and workshops with people. So the areas that I most focus on, I've done keynotes. I have done the platform speaking where I'm selling from stage. And then I've done a lot of speaking where I'm coming in to train on a specific topic. So not just presenting, but interacting with the audience and helping them execute on the strategies and the skills that I'm sharing with them.
Okay. So what's your preferred genre?
My preferred, I'm sorry. You know what? I would probably say the keynote part of it.
All right. Just, so what makes for a good keynote speaker, in your opinion?
What makes for a good keynote speaker? I'm sorry, I didn't hear the last part of it.
Yeah, what makes for a good keynote speaker?
I think really from my perspective, the good keynote speaker is somebody who can entertain, who can, the inspire, motivate thing is always there, but engage, I think, is the word that I'm looking for. I like a keynote speaker that can actually get the people in the audience leaning forward on the edge of their seats, wanting to hear what the next part of the story is and take them through a journey.
So how do you build that rapport with your audience as quickly as possible so that they're more receptive to your message?
Oh man, that is a deep dive question. Gaining rapport from my experience comes from being able to communicate in three different communication styles to your audience. Challenge in life is most people only communicate in the style that is their style they're most comfortable with. There's visual, there's auditory, there's kinesthetic. And there are different ways of communicating to your audience to connect with them in each of those. And my belief is you've got to be able to flow through all three of those within the first 30 seconds to minute of your presentation. So you're not shutting people off, in that beginning. So that is a trained and acquired skill of being able to be visual, also be auditory, and connect with the emotional side. You've got to jump quickly on it, but that to me is where you start establishing the rapport.
So if you were going to give advice to an up-and-coming keynote speaker, what would your three biggest tips be for them to be successful as a keynote speaker?
First key, be authentic. Whatever your story is, whatever your topic is that you're talking about, make sure that it is something that you've walked the walk on. Too many people are out there giving presentations on what they've learned from a book or whatever else, but they don't have an authentic experience with it. So number one is be authentic. Number two is, this is a lesson that came to me over time. When I first started speaking, I could have, let's say as an example, a room of 100 people. And 99 people were engaged, 99 people were laughing, 99 people were, into it. And one person sitting there with their arms crossed and just like not getting it. And I would shift all of my attention to try and win that person over. Don't. You're not going to. That person, for whatever reason, is not connecting with your topic or with you. Focus on the 99 people that are engaged. That would be the second thing. Just make sure, you know, don't get caught up in trying to win over somebody who just doesn't connect. And then the third is to, I know a lot of people who do one direction or the other. They either freestyle everything and it's just stream of consciousness, or other people who are so scripted that everything is verbatim. My suggestion is to find the middle road. Know what I call a mind map. Create your bullet points of where you know you want to touch on in the sequence in, and then freestyle in between. So you're staying on track with delivering content that is going to lift, inspire, educate, whatever you're going to be doing in your keynote. But don't go so freestyle that you're off on tangents that people are like, what in the world is he talking about?
All right. So are you a PowerPoint or a no PowerPoint guy?
If I do a PowerPoint, it is what I refer to as Zen PowerPoints, which means it's just an image or no more than two sentences on the slide. I don't want people focusing on my slides. I want them focusing on my message.
All right. So in the platform selling world, obviously success is largely measured in dollars and cents.
Yeah.
As a keynote speaker, how do you measure success?
For me personally, it is the interaction that happens after the presentation. You know, what are people coming up to me and sharing that they've gotten from that keynote? That's the one measure of success. And the second is, do I get invited back for another presentation?
All right. So let me think how I'm going to phrase this question. So when you're preparing for an upcoming speech, whether it's to a company or an association or whatever, how much customization, if any, do you do? Do you think people should have a signature talk and that's pretty much what they stick to, or whether they should, in a sense, almost customize everything to some extent based on the audience? And if so, how do you do the homework that you should do in advance to make that as on target as possible?
Great question. So for me personally, again, if it's a keynote, I stick with my signature talk and I integrate some things that kind of make it customized. But my idea is that the audience will change. The presentation stays the same. There are segments within that presentation that, again, I can customize to them. But I've done that thing where I go on the fly for, you know, the company, or customize completely the company. Look, they're hiring me because they liked the presentation that they saw or the presentation that I did. And I've crafted over the years, I have crafted that presentation to give the best results. So again, there's some free example, going back to the Tony Robbins stuff. When I first started working with Tony, he had already been doing his UPW, his Unleash the Power Within 4-day events for 17 years. And what was funny is I would watch videotapes of him from 17 years ago. And other than the audience interactions that he had with people, verbatim, he was saying the same thing in 1997 that he said in those videotapes from 17 years earlier. Wow. Again, the interaction would modify, but the other part stayed the same, because if you craft it correctly, again, this is a science and an art. And when you lock down the formula, use it. I went through a period in life where I totally abandoned my signature talk and was going in and doing all these other things. And at one point, I'm constantly going to new seminars and studying new materials and working with new people. And there was a woman that I work with, I'll give her credit. Her name is Lisa Sasevich. She was known very much in the speaking business. Was at one of her events and she's like, why did you throw away the formula that worked? Change the audience, not the message. And I went back to that thing that I first was using 27, 28 years ago, and that became my signature talk again.
So I have a couple other questions I want to ask you, Willard, but before we do, let's take a quick break for a word from our sponsor.
Are you a business owner or entrepreneur who's had great success in the business world, and now you want to launch a speaking career to share your message with the world? If that's you, then listen up. 25-year speaking industry veteran Brett Ridgway has released his latest special report, Three Key Things Entrepreneurs Must Master to Build a Profitable Speaking Business. To pick up your copy, go to brettridgway.com/freebie.
And we are back with the Spotlight on a Speaking Show. And my guest in this episode is Willard Barr. So, Willard, when you are doing a presentation, do you believe that a speaker should take questions from the audience or not? Because some say if you give up the microphone, you can lose control of the room.
Usually what I do is I ask people to hold their questions until the end, because I tell them that, you know, most of the questions that you're going to come up with, again, because I've crafted that presentation, most of your questions are going to be answered by the time I get there. And if at the end question hasn't been answered, feel free to ask me. If it's a training versus a keynote, you know, or a platform sales training, of course, there are questions that are encouraged at different points, but keynote or platform, I let them know when I start, hey, look, you may come up with some questions, hold them until the end. Anything that I don't answer during the presentation, we can talk about at that point.
Okay. All right. So now it's the bare your soul portion of the program, and that's all right. Share an embarrassing mistake you made in your speaking career. It left you a little red-faced at the time, but a valuable lesson was learned, and it would be something you would highly advise an aspiring speaker not to do.
Let's see. Probably the most embarrassing for me personally is I do tailor my presentation style to the audience that's there. So, you know, example, if I'm talking to a bunch of school teachers, you know, my communication and my language is going to be very, very clean. And 2 years ago, I was doing an event in Las Vegas. It was an annual convention for nightclub owners. And they're a rowdy bunch with a much, let's say, more open language style. And I was peppering my presentation with some F-bombs. And I do that at times just to shock people out of where they are. You know, it's like, oh my God, the guy just said the F-word in the middle of things, but it's because I want to get their attention and pull them in. I don't do it to be dirty or coarse or disrespectful. That presentation, because of the audience, I think I overused it. And when I finished, I was kind of like, you know, internally beating myself up going, dude, why did you go so street language on this type of thing? They're club owners, but you were talking about maximizing employee potential. And I was embarrassed by going a little too heavy on the obscenities.
All right. So for a person who's wanting to begin a speaking career, mm-hmm. What's your best advice, Willard, on how to find their sweet spot, so to speak, topic-wise? I mean, because a lot of people get caught up in, well, that's a hot topic these days. For example, everybody and their brother is doing training and speaking about AI these days.
Yeah,
you know, everybody's suddenly an AI expert or whatever. So how do you find your sweet spot and not just be another face in the crowd, so to speak?
I want to make sure this does not sound like it is a sales pitch. But to answer your question, I have to mention a course that I created several years ago to help people specifically with that. The first thing that I have people do when they're going through that course is a series of five questions that are, I refer to it as your confidence formula. And the idea is, what are you good at? What are some of the things that you've overcome in the past? What are the accreditations and certificates and all those types of things? You know, again, five questions to get them to look at who they really are. Then I challenge them to take their answers, go to somebody who really knows them, and get that person to help them add even more, because most of us have been taught over the years, oh, you know, pride is a bad thing. You got to be humble, this, that, and the other. But if you're really going to be the expert and the educator when you're on stage, you got to own those things that have allowed you to become that person. So the first thing is to identify all these cool little facets of yourself that make you uniquely you. Then the second thing that I have them do is go, okay, if you were going to educate the younger version of yourself, what would be the key things that you would want to make sure that you're teaching you? Then by having done that, I go, now your ideal client avatar is the younger version of you. And your job is to educate them on how you went from where you were to where you are. And through that, you end up creating your signature talk. To me, that's the approach, again, because it goes back to the first thing that I answered when you asked about the 3 points. You got to be authentic. People connect with you. You could be the worst technical presenter on stage. You could do us and fumble. But if you're authentic, that connects with your audience. That, I mean, the technical part of it, you get out there and you keep doing it and doing it and doing it, you're going to get better. But if you're authentic, that's the part that you have to go to the most. I hope I answered the question there.
No, great answer. So I want to segue over to a couple of other things real quick. Yeah. Number one is introduction. So as a speaker, do you pre-write an introduction you want the host to use for you? Do you let them freelance it? How do you make sure that they set you up as best as possible so that audience will be receptive to you?
I do both, actually. So I have a pre-written introduction that I can give people. And if the person knows me, and I don't mean like they're a dear friend, if they've called me in because they've seen me do a presentation or they know my work and they are personally connected to my work, I let them do the intro. Because again, it's their authenticity that is going, this is why I brought this guy to you. I saw him do this presentation. He did this guy. No, so if they're in that mode, I'll let them freestyle it. Otherwise, I do have an intro that I've created.
All right. So a couple other related questions. Optimal length of an introduction. When does an introduction become too long in your opinion? And what are your thoughts on video introductions versus somebody speaking from the stage?
So I think an optimal introduction is no more than 15 seconds. If you're getting up to the 30 second minute mark, you're going on way too long. It's you just want to get people excited about why are we here? What are we going to learn potentially? Video introductions, that would all depend on who's doing the video. If it's somebody who is, for lack of a better term, a celebrity endorsement, somebody that audience has a connection to, and that person can't be there live and they're going to do that introduction for me, as long as they have a level of, a level of authority with the audience, I'm okay with that. But if they're not like the guy or girl for that audience, no, I want somebody live on the stage for it.
All right, so I'm going to give you a couple of minutes now, Willard, to tell people a little bit more about what it is that you do and how they can get involved in your world if they so choose.
Sure. So my business life is pretty diverse. I am a published author, and I continue to write more books, professional speaker, as we're talking about. I also do business consulting individually with companies, but I also have a team of advisors. So if the needs that you have as a company are not my area of expertise, I've got 30 other advisors who work with the same methodology as I do that I can bring in and plug into the area that you need. And then recently, because of my years of doing the business consulting and the business advising, I've actually created a new company. The technology for the company has been in place for 7 years, but I have created a new company that helps automate a lot of businesses' marketing and sales functions. So I'm across the board on things I do, but the main thing is really about helping businesses grow, scale, and sustain that growth.
And the primary website that you would recommend someone go to is?
WillardBarth.com. That will redirect you to WillardBarthEnterprises.com, but just my first name, last name, and boom, you're there.
All right. So we mentioned at the beginning, we would touch on the anatomy of transformation a little bit. And I just realized I have yet to do that. So Why don't you give us a bird's eye view of what that all means, Willard?
Sure. I'm going to do my best to keep it short, but just to give some context for it, about 2008, I came off the speaking circuit for a while because my mother was having some health issues. Moved her in with me, was taking care of her. And when I got ready to go back out on the speaking circuit, I was talking to one of my mentors and I'm like, I don't want to go out and just, again, signature talk that I kind of abandoned. I'm like, I don't want to go out and just regurgitate what I was talking about before. I want to come with something new and fresh. And he said to me, Willard, there's a lot of people who I know who have overcome cancer, who've overcome losing a leg, who've overcome sexual abuse, drug and alcohol addiction, being homeless, being in jail, being $250,000 in debt. But I don't know anybody other than you that's overcome all of those things and have spent the last, at that point, however many years, helping other people make those same type of transformations. He said, what are the organizing principles that have allowed you to make those changes and what you teach other people? And I'll tell you, it was a great question. It took me about 9 months to come up with an answer, but I ended up first identifying this seven phase. I don't call it stages or steps because some of these, they're not conscious. Seven phases of transformation. And then I went out and talked to every successful person I knew, whether they were in business, entertainment, sports, you know, whatever the case may be. And I kind of interviewed them without telling them what my phases were to be able to recognize that every one of them went through those same phases. So the first phase of the anatomy of transformation is the phase of ignorance. We don't know what we don't know. We may not know the damage that we're doing to the world around us through the way that we're acting or addictions or some of the other things. Or we may not know things that are possible. Example, I grew up in a very rural part of Pennsylvania. And I grew up with the belief that factory worker kids. How am I trying to say this? If your parent was a factory worker, that was going to be your career. If they were a business owner, that's what you're going to do. If they were a doctor, that's what they were going to do. Growing up in that environment, I didn't realize that you could do whatever you want. So I was in a state of ignorance. Phase two is awareness, where you become aware, okay, the actions that I'm doing are damaging my life and other people, or, hey, there's opportunities here I never thought possible. Awareness does not lead to transformation itself. Awareness for many people becomes their excuse and why they stay stuck. Well, I can't because the third phase of transformation is where I refer to taking responsibility, stopping blaming people, events, economy, anything else, and take responsibility saying it's the decisions I made and the actions that I took that got me to where I am. Whether where I am is a good place or a bad place, I got me here. Nobody else did. I may have had people offer me suggestions along the way, but I had to make the decision and take the actions to implement their suggestions. Phase four is what I call immersion. And immersion means, are you really going to commit to making this transformation, or are you just going to try? Like, you're going to go to the gym once a month and expect to get healthy. And I was like, no, you've got to commit that you're going all in on making this transformation. Phase five is what I refer to as interdependence. There are only two ways that we learn things. One, school of trial and error, which we also call the school of hard knocks. Two, the school of other people's experience, OPE. And what I've learned over the years is if I plug into you, Brett, and learn from your experience, I can take that learning curve from 10 years to 1 year, because you're going to teach me how to avoid all of the potholes and the roadblocks and all those things. So interdependence for me is finding as many resources, whether it's books, whether it's videos, whether it's seminars, whether it's mentors, whether it's coaches, and just picking people's brains to go, how did you do it? Then over time, the more interdependence that I do, I move to phase six, which is ownership, which means I've taken some from you, Brett. I've taken some from Tony Robbins. I've taken some from Wayne Dyer, Keith Cunningham, all these people that I've studied with. And now it's magically becoming mine because it's all combining together into one form. That leads me to phase seven of the anatomy of transformation, which is influence. Doesn't mean that I need to become a speaker, a coach, a teacher, whatever. It just means that by my example, the transformation that I've made, the authenticity, I now influence other people without even knowing it, because they see who I was, where I am, and go, you know what? If Willard can do it, maybe I can too. So those are the seven phases of transformation.
Oh, fascinating stuff. So Willard, as we wrap up today, what would be your final words of wisdom for an aspiring speaker?
Final words for wisdom. If you're just aspiring and starting out, speak everywhere you can. Don't worry about what you're getting paid for, because this is about perfecting your signature talk and getting comfortable being on stage. Speak at your local church. Speak at your local Kiwanis group. Speak at, you know, go to networking events and find even, you know, an opportunity to do a 10-minute presentation there, a micro version of your signature talk. But speak everywhere that you can to build your skill set. The money will come later. When you've actually got that message and you are influencing people from your presentation, speak every opportunity that you get.
All right. Well, fantastic advice. So, Willard, thank you so much for being my guest on this episode of the Spotlight on Speaking Show. I wish you the greatest success in all that you do. And to all my listeners out there, by all means, if you haven't been over to BrentRidgeway.com, hop on over there and get the free special report, Three Key Things Entrepreneurs Must Master to Build a Profitable Speaking Business. And as always, I wish you the greatest of success in all that you do. And may this year be your greatest year yet. Take care, everybody. Bye-bye.
This has been the Spotlight on Speaking Show with Brett Ridgeway. Be sure to join us every week as we interview speaking industry pros and have them share their best tips for building a profitable speaking business. Until next week, thank you for tuning in. And remember to visit our website at spotlightonspeaking.com so you can enjoy even more great episodes like this one. While you're here, be sure to subscribe via your favorite network. We look forward to seeing you next time on the Spotlight on Speaking Show. Until then, our sincere best wishes to you for the greatest of success as you work to build your own profitable speaking business. This has been the Spotlight on Speaking show with Brett Ridgway. Be sure to join us every week as we interview speaking industry pros and have them share their best tips for building a profitable speaking business. Until next week, thank you for tuning in. And remember to visit our website at spotlightonspeaking.com so you can enjoy even more great episodes like this one. While you're here, be sure to subscribe via your favorite network. We look forward to seeing you next time on the Spotlight on Speaking show. Until then, our sincere best wishes to you for the greatest of success as you work to build your own profitable speaking business.